Hello, Mehdi. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
Cool.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Thank you for agreeing to do this. Not everybody wants to, share so publicly. And I'm just really grateful that you're willing to do this because graph theory is one of the things that I am very fascinated by. I barely know anything, and so I'd love to just talk to you a little bit about it today. And I'm just going to start by, a little bit of background that I met Mehdi. I met Mehdi actually before we went to psychedelic assisted therapy school together. I met his wife Anita first and briefly met Mehdi. And then we ended up in the same program and in the same small group of our program. And just created a friendship from there. And that is where I first learned about graph theory was from you, Mehdi. I think it's the first time I ever heard about it. And it just, I feel like it's something that has leveled up my psychology kind of education or understanding. And so I'll just let you kind of just introduce what graph theory is with the basics. So if you just want to launch from there.
Sure, thanks. Graf, Stanislav Graf, that was his first name, Stanislav. He trained as a psychiatrist in Prague, former Czechoslovakia, in the 1950s. And it was at a time when, like in the middle of his studies, when Sandoz, the Swiss chemical company, they came up with LSD. And they sent samples of LSD to different universities and places in the world where they could test it and sort of use it in their own treatments and research and give feedback to Sandoz as what it's good for. So in his institution, they used it with various patients and in research with a variety of research projects. And so he came to know the psychedelic experience through using LSD with his patients under supervision of his professor. And then in 1967, he came to United States for some studies and some, I guess he was invited to do some work at Maryland Hospital. And at that time, it was the time where psychedelics were made illegal by Nixon, the president, the war on drugs and all. And it was the Maryland Hospital was the only university was the only place in the US where they could still use LSD for research. So he continued his work there. And he never went back to Czechoslovakia because in 1968 the Russians took over Prague and the rest is history. So he stayed in the US and did more work with LSD, with individual patients. And he collected a lot of data on what happens in these experiences. And slowly he discovered that, I mean, the legend is that he worked with 60,000 people. I mean, he collected information from stories and experiences from 6,000 people, maybe more, maybe a bit less. I don't know. But there were a lot. He worked with individuals, he worked with large groups, all kinds of things. So he formed this what is called the cartography, a new map of the psyche, the human psyche, which went beyond what was common and was used in sort of psychotherapy at the time. You know, with beginning with Freud, we have the idea that we are born and we die, and in whatever happens in between these two events, forms our psychology, affects our behavior, and so on. He, through his research, his findings from his the people he worked with, he developed this new map that included the period before birth and also transpersonal, mythological, archetypal experiences and sort of this expanded consciousness that we arrive at in psychedelic experience. And he called them non-ordinary states of consciousness, that all of those things impact who we are and how we are in this body and in this world. For example, the experience of growing in the womb, in that sort of the watery world, and then coming under pressure to exit just before birth, and then pushing through or trying to get to the vaginal canal, the birth canal. And once we enter that, then the sort of the pressures and the terror of that state where we can't go back and we have to push forward, and it's difficult and it's traumatic and it can be frightening. And all the sort of the imagery that comes to the unborn baby at that time, all the physical impact of the birth process itself, all those things form the sort of the almost like a core of a trauma story that is charged with emotions of maybe terror, maybe even, you know, ecstasy, all kinds of things. That after we are born, we go through life and other events, other experiences that have similar emotional charging will kind of cover and accumulate over this core that we brought in. And it's like an onion that grows layer and layer and layer and layer on top. And we have sort of all these very similarly charged experiences throughout life that are built around that core experience, prenatal experience.
Wow. Yeah. And so the way I was able to understand that was the evidence that something happened in utero or during the birthing process had an impact on, you know, an adult, a pattern in their life, a trauma response, something, was that after witnessing so many of these experiences and seeing how the challenges that people would have in life, he could almost start predicting what part of the birthing process maybe was most profound or impactful for that person, right? Kind of the evidence was in almost starting to be able to predict certain. And do you have any examples of that where something could be happening in your adult life and then through the Groff theory, you would be able to maybe have an idea of where that might have started in the birthing process?
Yeah, absolutely. And I discovered that by accident. The first time I did breath work. Actually, it was the first time I did breath work in a group, and someone sat for me. And and I'll explain later how the breath work session goes. But anyways, I was breathing, and I had these images and sort of body experience that came to me. And it was like I was in this room that was just, it felt like I was floating in a room full of water, but I was in the water. I was sort of suspended in the water and was very comfortable. And at some point, I started to sort of try to get out. And there was something that was sort of preventing me. It was like, I had some pain in my body, and I was trying to sort of crawl out, but I kept slipping, and something preventing me from moving forward. And I was getting angrier, more fierce, more forceful. And at some point, I just got so tired, exhausted, I just dropped. And then decided, okay, I'll get up again and I'll push through again. And it was very sort of natural to feel that way in that moment. I didn't know why I was feeling that way, but I had to do it. So it happened a few times that I sort of would drop out of exhaustion. I would get up again. It's like, yeah, I'm going to do it again. And the feelings that would come to me when I would sort of be exhausted and drop, there were feelings of failure, desperation, despondence. You know, I'm ineffective. I can't do this. Those feelings sort of, you can sort of say, you know, low self-image, low self-esteem, or or loss of confidence, feeling of failure and depression, that sort of thing. Then later on, I realized that those are sort of a cluster of feelings and mental images and thoughts and beliefs that come up for me when in throughout my life, in situations where I've been under stress, that I would try and try and try, and I would get tired because nothing is working. Then I would sort of have this like, yeah, I've failed. I'm not going to get out of here. I'm not going to get this done. It's hopeless. I can't do anything. Self-blame, all of those things. So it's sort of the emotional charge of that moment pre-birth carried through into adult life at different times when similar situations of being stuck in a situation that I had to get out of, but I couldn't find a way out. Those things would show up again. Those feelings and those thoughts about myself would show up. So it was very, very helpful to find, oh, that's where it started. And once I resolved that, once I become aware of it, then I resolved that by going through that birth canal, by going through, I mean, it doesn't happen just because I want to, but it's by sort of intentionally doing the work in order to pass through that stage, then these other emotionally charged situations in life won't affect you as much or in the same way.
So can you describe how you would work through that in your altered state through breathing, how you might resolve that so that you would have a different life experience?
The baby or the fetus, as they're going through that experience, does not have awareness of what is happening. Things are happening, but the fetus does not have sort of a distance from the experience. It's one with the experience. So that's why that sort of those images and those frightening moments and those pressures and stresses, they stick. But as an adult, I approach the breath work and the non-nervous state in an intentional, aware fashion. So I know that I'm safe. I know that I'm here in this room and I'm breathing while the music is going on, while somebody's sitting for me and I'm going through the experience. I haven't lost consciousness. My consciousness actually has expanded to receive these images from my unconscious. So because I have a little bit more capacity to observe that experience, then I can go through the experience without it overwhelming me. And afterwards, I can reflect on it. I can integrate that experience so that I'm not confused by it. I'm not driven by it. It becomes a part of my experience, my conscious experience. So once it becomes that, then it doesn't drive me anymore.
Thank you for that. For me to get a good understanding of, because it's such a new way of looking at things, but it's also really related to therapy, and you're a therapist. And I was sharing with you that in all the work I've done, we would maybe work with like our traumas that happened, usually like from 3 till 5 would be the ones that would come up when we do inner child work and intergenerational trauma. In the intergenerational trauma programs that I was a part of. And so how is it, as a therapist, how is this altered states of consciousness or this non-ordinary state of consciousness, Nori? So the state you get into through breathing, through meditation, how is that different than childhood trauma healing that usually happens in a therapeutic relationship?
Yeah. It's not different, but it includes it. The childhood trauma is part of that, is another layer of those sort of layers of trauma that we accumulate through life. The intergenerational trauma is another layer of that. So the graph work does include intergenerational trauma. It includes archetypal, mythical stories and events. So it's not separate. It's not sort of another way of doing it, but it's sort of it includes all of that.
I feel like it's drilling down further. Like it's, and I like what you said, where I said, why, when we were in the trauma programs and, you know, as counselors on those programs, didn't we hear people talk about their in utero experiences and their things related to birth? And you said it's the way you explain, well, the way I understood it was it would just take a, like a whole another kind of layer of trust and another, some more time and safety building and real, you know, purposeful intention to be able to enter that state without the help of the breathing or without the help of an entheogenic plant medicine to really touch some of those initial kind of experiences that we have before we're born. Is that right?
It does depend on, I mean, the depths we go to in the work. It's very dependent on the mindset and the intention, the expectation and the setting, and also the person who is attending or sitting for us, their state, their consciousness, their openness and neutrality. It all affects the experience, just like it does in any psychedelic experience. The set and setting and the sitter, they're all big factors.
And I don't think until I learned about everything in psychedelic assisted therapy did I realize, I mean, we talked about it all the time, but I just understood on a bigger level that when we're in group therapy with the same people for 5 weeks and everything we're doing is around building trust and living together and connecting and sharing and building, like building trust up slowly, right? Not just jumping into deep things, that we're able to, we would go to what they call the trauma room, and we go down into the trauma room and we would have a session, so much like a psychedelic session, because spirit would enter that room. Spirit would be guiding us through the work we were doing. So many intangible things were taking place in that work. And that was, you know, I guess what you're saying, right? The intention of the group and of the therapist who was leading and everything was that we were going to work on that childhood trauma. Had we entered that space and did it all thinking we were going to be, you know, looking for in utero experiences, maybe that's what we would have been able to create together. But I just think it's fascinating that not until I took this program and started talking to you did I hear about people healing in the womb. I just, I might have heard about it a couple of times in, you know, 25 years.
Yeah, I think it sounds like a new idea. It is not something that Groff invented. I mean, of course, he synthesized and he put ideas together and presented them as a sort of a coherent theory and practice. But these ideas have existed for thousands and thousands of years in traditional cultures, dealing with archetypes and unborn entities and animals and myths and so on. It's not something new. We're just coming back to it after a sort of a long period of forgetting about it.
Absolutely. And I mean, that is something that we talked about separate from the being in the healing program, but like the elders would talk about what happens in the womb and, you know, how you talk to the baby and when the spirit enters, the soul enters the body at what time, and lots of ceremony and protection around that. It isn't new. I think it was the theory and the fact that, you know, Groff claims to have mapped the human psyche and, you know, and that there's almost a science behind it too is what, yeah, it's just really made me interested in it because it's like, why wouldn't we want to start in the beginning, right? Why wouldn't we want to start with that initial experience, you know, at the core of the onion? Or try to get there anyways, if we're looking at different layers and levels of healing, like that seems like it's.
Yeah, I think that the beauty of Groff's work is that because, you know, for the past 300 years, we have started to believe that, science is the only way to know anything. So he took up this sort of a scientific approach to mapping the psyche by just interviewing and collecting experiences from thousands and thousands of people and say, hey, we have evidence now. And so it's scientific. And there's a lot more reception to it because it is based on evidence.
Okay. So do you just want to share a little bit about, because I think you did mention that LSD became illegal for studies, research at one point, and then Groff switched to breath work. Like, how did he even discover that you could get it? Or again, was it from another ancient teaching or another society that he knew that you could achieve a similar altered state, but through breathing only?
Breath work has been used in different traditions to reach altered state or expanded state of consciousness. And for example, by Sufis in the movement and breathing and making sounds and eventually reaching that ecstatic state, that's been around for 1,000 years. So, and other traditions. I think one story that I heard was that at one point after an LSD session, the participants would need some body work. And body work is a sort of special, body work is part of the process as well. And that they would, during the body work, they would start breathing faster. And that breathing would bring them back into the process that they went through before. And that sort of accidental discovery that was picked up, that once the psychedelic session was over, fast breathing would bring it back on again. So once the LSD and other drugs were banned, they decided to use just breath work, which is to reach those states. And what is really involved is lying down on a mat, breathing really fast with loud evocative music going on, and then if the person needs to move or make sounds and so on, they can do that. They don't have to sort of stay lying down. They can sit up, or some people even move. But there's a sitter who makes sure that they are kept safe. They're not sort of banging into anything, and also they cover the eyes with blindfolds. So the music, blindfold, and fast breathing. And the fast breathing changes the chemistry in the blood in some ways that we're not sure how. And the person starts having visuals, seeing patterns maybe, or having body sensations that they can get curious about and they can follow, or they might sort of suddenly encounter something in the mind that surprises them. They're in a new place, or they feel a presence of someone and so on. So say there's lots of things might happen, and they just follow that. And that just can go on for 2, 3, 4 hours. An average session is about 3 hours, which sort of with a sort of a crescendo at the beginning and sort of a trip in the middle, and then landing the end. There's an arc to it usually.
And so, yeah, and you're usually paired up, right? So one person is having a journey and the other person's holding space to just keep you physically safe from falling over, or...
Physically safe, or if you need tissue because you're crying, or whatever, they can hand it to you. Or if you need to go to the bathroom, they can, bring you to the bathroom because your eyes are closed. And in that state, you don't want to open them. I mean, you're oversensitive to light at that point. Things like that. And then at the end, once you are completely or almost completely out, they give you a piece of paper with some coloring material, to drawing material, to sketch an idea of what the experience of the event. And that usually helps sort of reminding you later of what you went through. And then afterwards, there can be a debrief, some talk, simple conversation without analysis, around sort of describing the experience in order to integrate it.
So personally for you, like, where are you at with Groff theory? Because for me, I first heard about it and I just was like, when I would talk to therapists and they would say they didn't follow Groff theory, I would be just like, what? Why wouldn't you? Like, it just seems like the end all be all. But then after, you know, I settled down a little bit and I actually had a couple of integration sessions with a therapist who didn't follow Groff theory. And I kind of saw the benefits of not getting too caught up in, you know, analyzing my every kind of experience and trying to make it fit, because Groff theory has the four matrices, right? The four. And so I was always trying to fit into one of those. And so what about, where are you at? Like what are the limitations, or when, you know, when do you think it's great to apply it, or how does it inform your practice?
I'll tell you a little bit about sort of the effect on my personal life and then professional life. I found the Groff map of the psyche very useful for myself personally, because over the years, when I looked back, you know, past 40 years, for example, I've had dreams that I could not connect to anything. They were sort of random dreams that are very powerful, but they were sort of stood out on their own without any connection. There were like dots that were not connected to anything. Good dreams and even terrorizing dreams. I had random daydreams that I had. Again, I could not connect with any, I could not explain why. Then different events in my life, and again, I had some explanation in terms of conventional psychotherapies or psychology theories, but nothing to hold them all together, no framework to put them all in and sort of make sense of all of them. By making sense, I mean sort of they all fit within this framework, and they have a role. They're connected to something. They're not just random things that happen to me. Like some of my personal experiences of, for example, of I used to have this recurring nightmare that would wake me up. I was stuck in this place. I was like my hips were caught in this very narrow hole, and I could not get out. I could not breathe properly, and I would like start breathing really like that and wake myself up. I was panicking, and so I mean, relating that to my birth experience, which I was not aware of. I had no idea how my birth was. My mother did not tell me any stories about that. Or dreams that where I would have this sort of a very spiritual, very divine connection. And that would be so overwhelming that I would cry in my sleep and wake myself up again, because it was such an amazing, ecstatic experience. It was an experience of awe. But again, all of those things fit within the map, because the Groff's map of the psyche, because those mythological or transpersonal events and beings connects us all. We are all connected to those. I mean, if I see this Inca god in my dream, which I have no connection with in, you know, personally, historically, and it affects me so much. It is not in my consciousness, in my sort of repetition of all my past lives. I've had some connection with that. It's all in the collective unconscious. So I'm using Groff's theory, I can make sense of what that brings me, what that divine presence is bringing me. When I listen to my clients talking about where they're stuck, I think knowing about the expanded cartography of the psyche allows me to be a little bit more, how do you say, permissive, a little bit more expanded about what is happening here. It is not just, oh, you're having a problem at work, or you were in a abusive relationship, or you've had this trauma. There is that fits within a bigger context, a few other layers that allows us to be a little bit more patient with it, and it will sort of allow it to sort of to grow a little bit and show itself and express itself a little bit more clearly, because that is not just the only thing that happens in life, but it has some historic equivalence or other points in your life, in your history, that you may or may not be aware of.
Thank you. Yeah. And so I'm thinking about, you were talking about your hips being squished in one of those dreams. Did you ever have reconciliation with that? Did you ever figure out what that was about?
Yeah, in one of my sessions, most recent sessions, I found out that I was stuck. Mm. I was stuck in a very painful way in the birth canal. And once I sort of got help with that and resolved that, I feel different. Feel differently in my body and in my in the way I look at that story doesn't really, it sort of has lost its grip on me in a sense.
Right. So energetically something
was released, yes.
Released. Wow. So I'm trying to think about sticking with the basics, because it is really, it's starting to be pretty I'm starting to understand all the layers of the Groff stuff and applying it to, yeah, again, my personal experience. And then also as a counselor myself, I don't know. Is there anything else you think that we're missing that might be?
I can tell you that different people have different experiences through breath work. Sometimes it relates to this life, this sort of the biographical period of our life from birth till now. Sometimes it relates to the period before birth and around birth. And sometimes it goes beyond that. People see themselves as animals, experience themselves as things, as groups of people. One person can feel like a woman can feel like she is all women, or a man can experience himself as all men and sort of really feel the collective experience of all men, or having experiences of ancient people or previous generations or other lives of people that they may not really know about, other cultures that they don't really know about. We can travel to all of those places in that expanded state of our consciousness, because it is all connected. And we know that from experience. It's not a spiritual belief that, I'm promoting this. It is something that I've experienced myself, and I've seen other people go through.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I think, that why I say this is kind of like another layer of education for me, because it enters into that whole, mystical part that we don't necessarily touch on if we're having a talking therapy session or even a group therapy session, right? That whole experiencing something outside of yourself. Actually, we spend a lot of time in trauma therapy trying to keep people in their body, right? So it's a different, the shift.
Right. Yeah, the conventional psychotherapy has little to do with the mystical experience or the spirituality of the person. And the medical model of psychedelic therapy also is going in that same direction, having exact amounts of exact molecules, exact expectations of what will happen based on prescribed protocols and so on. So we are doing our best to exclude the mystical experience.
Well, I am always looking for things that are accessible and legal, because there's some amazing things happening in the psychedelic field, but there's just so many boundaries and barriers around all of that stuff that I'm all about things that, like, what I haven't done the actual Groff breathing yet. I've done a little bit of breathing in one of the programs that I was in, but how empowering to be able to tap into that, altered state of consciousness or non-ordinary state yourself without having to take anything in.
And it is a powerful, very powerful, very surprising method to that we. Just the most basic thing that we have, the simplest thing that we have, and we always have, with our breath. We can access this deep, huge, tremendous state and universe of really information and connection and being.
And so is the breathing activating our DMT, our androgynous DMT, the DMT that's in us, or is that what they're not clear about what it's actually doing?
We're not sure. We are not sure how it works, but we know that it works.
Okay, cool. Because that's what I found fascinating too, is that this DMT, these altered states happen spontaneously through giving. Is it being born or just when you're giving birth and when you're dying? That's what they know, right? That it gets released. Yeah. So I was wondering if that's what the breathing was doing, but like you say, they're not clear.
I wish I knew.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much because, you know, every time I see you face to face, I want to know more or do show and tell about what I, you know, different, healing that I'm doing and how it can match up. Cause I think it's pretty neat when I have an experience and I have more than one person who's interested in graph theory say, that's matrix three. Like that's, you know, when you're leaving the womb and being born, that those things that you're experiencing or you have experienced in your life, they seem to link back to that specific, time in your childbirth. So I always find that really, yeah, just like validating and interesting when I can match them up.
And one thing I want to say is that about Graf himself is that he was and he is an unusual man. He's very old right now. Mm-hmm. He's 90s. But you can watch videos of him on YouTube and other places. And he's extremely knowledgeable, extremely methodical, but he is also very unassuming, very kind and patient man. That is unusual, you know, to sort of the combination of those things in one person. That's quite impressive.
Yeah, I've heard that he's kind of a, not kind of a, but I've heard he's a genius. People call him a genius in his...
The way he was able to bring all these different aspects of human knowledge together and put them together and synthesize coherent model, I think it's that is ingenious. Yeah.
And I like how you said that, like there's lots to read out there. And then there's again, lots of free resources on YouTube that will talk about holotropic breathing and Stanislav Grof and Grof theory. So, thanks for that reminder that if people want to know more, there is endless. And then there's, I know you're in a training program right now, as a few of my friends are, and there's just holotropic breathwork retreat that are happening if that's the part that you want to experience. Workshops and retreats, right?
Yes. And I would say if you decide to experience the Grof breathwork, look for someone who is certified in Grof training, because the term holotropic and breathwork has been used and overused by so many people, and you know you want to get the real deal and not get, you know, shortchanged by people who just want to
make money,
pretend that they are doing the work.
Right. Well, that's a good hot tip too. Thank you for that. Well, my friend, thank you so much for hanging out with me, and thank you for agreeing to do this. I know you're very busy.
Well, thanks for having me on, and I really enjoyed it.
Okay. Take care, Mehdi.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.